This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Moore's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Is the little cross.
Bismarck. No, wasn't it Bismarck? Wasn't that
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might, shock wall.
Is that the shock master's wall?
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
is our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Monday evening, this cold, chilly Monday evening. Snow is in the air, we had some ice here earlier today and some snow in the forecast for tomorrow, but we're keeping you warm. A little vintage vault action. You guys better enjoy it. It may be last one for a little bit here. Podcast. We had a lot of cool little specials coming up for you. Also, cool was the brand new open, Scott Criscola. Hope you enjoyed that.
Oh, I did, of course. Good evening, JR. Good evening, PTB. I was almost said good afternoon, but it's this time of year. It's dark and 4 o'clock, too. Right. So, welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 275 of the Place to Be podcast. We are one quarter of the way left before we hit three bills. And, that's still in the works as well, but we had a lot of fun. Fun month. It's always a fun month here at Place to Be Nation. Christmas, one of both yours and my favorite holidays, and we're holiday junkies, so we're going to have a lot of fun over the next few weeks. But yes, the last time we'll dip into the silver box, at least for the next few weeks before the new year. How was your weekend, JR? Went well? No. Customer service calamities or anything?
No, everything was fine. I had some delicious Boneheads dinner.
Our good friends Boneheads, yes, our good friends. You had the rooster sauce, right?
I did. I was back to the rooster. We had a few other ones. Roger, the Beast, put down a bunch of the fire starters, so good on him. But
did he really? Wow.
Yes, I did not partake in the fire starter. I had some rooster, I had some war pigs, and was the Buffalo Ranch one we debuted? I forget the name of it. Down by the River or something?
Down by the River, yeah, something like that. You like that war pig sauce, huh?
War pigs is good. That's my go-to.
That's good stuff. I like the rooster one too. I like the burger of the month. It was it's like their chipotle ketchup on it with something else. It looked pretty good. Anyway, we like talking about our good friends at Boneheads in West Warwick. It looks like fall is over though. it's definitely winter now in the Northeast. And my ride this morning was a little shaky. I wouldn't say it was icy per se by the time I got on the road. How about you? You usually get on the road a little earlier than me. Was it?
No, it wasn't too bad. The back roads were a little, just kind of had to be careful a little bit, but
yeah,
not too bad, actually.
No, there was a 20-car collision in north-central Connecticut, kind of the Hartford area, nowhere near me. Mine was just a slow drive anyway, but as you know, Fairfield County as well. So, but yeah, it's a little chilly. But tonight, though, our vintage vault takes us back to a warm month. And we are in the Northeast, so let us open the door. Sometimes I'm wondering.
Hey, what is going on here?
I know eventually I am going to actually scare you because I feel like we do these a little more spread out, but it still smells like weird cheese in here. But you'd be happy to know, Principal Belding, that we won't be bothering you for a while. All right, for tonight, episode 275 of the Place to Be podcast. It is good to be king. And for one man, maybe twice.
Go ahead. Jump the gun.
No, I said it's good to be king, and in tonight's case, maybe twice.
This is where I feel like the Austin heel turn finally kind of got cooking. And I think there's a few reasons for it that we'll talk about. But
yeah.
I think it's evidenced in that promo. But I feel like this is now really where it kind of gets into full gear.
I like the whole, my name is Stone Cold Steve Austin here. Weird. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on episode 275 of the Place to Be podcast, the 2001 King of the Ring. And I agree with you on that, in the sense that the heel turn took a turn, literally, because now Austin is going up against guys that the fans, I don't want to say like more, but like equally, as compared to the last couple months where the fans were kind of 50-50 or didn't really care. Now you're dipping into the pool of guys that fans maybe like a little more at times. I think that's where the heel turn really kicks in. And speaking of this arena and this crowd, they were honored today on WWE.com with one of the Slammy categories. They actually got a Slammy, the Izod crowd from the night after WrestleMania.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Bizarro world. So June 24th, 2001, live from the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. JR, our last visit to the Garden State was...
SummerSlam 97?
Correct. Yeah, I don't believe they were 98, right? 99? Nope. 2000? Yep. Last time since SummerSlam 90. So almost a little under 4 years since last time we were in the Garden State. Your attendance, solid as always, 17,777. Your buy rate, 0.84, pretty good. And your announcers, good old JR Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, who continues to be on a roll, but this is probably the last pay-per-view where his announcing is really, really rock solid. Because he isn't really taking sides, but then once he does, he loses a little bit of his gleam. But we'll talk more about that. What do we have on Sunday Night Heat, or any dark matches, JR?
We had a title match, Scott, a European title match.
What?
As Matt Hardy, still the European champion, defeated Justin Credible.
Oh, okay. Okay, there we go.
There you go.
There you go. All right. One of the things we heard on that little opening vignette to start the pay-per-view, a very familiar voice, JR, but not one to the WWF.
Yo, it's me. It's me. It's DDP.
That's right. As finally, after 2 months of kind of ducking the issue, this whole WCW influence finally... finally takes hold a little bit, and we start to see this actual purchase from before WrestleMania actually be used. Because after Judgment Day 2000, in fact, I think it was the night after Judgment Day in San Jose, of course, the dreadful accident that happened at the end of that night. But earlier in the night, I believe there was some of the inklings of what was to come.
Mm-hmm.
We started getting some run-ins. We had mentioned them. The WCW influence was finally taking, not hold, but finally stepping to the forefront.
Right, and the interesting thing here is Paige actually was not one of the contracts included in the buyout.
Mm-hmm.
He took his own buyout.
Right.
And gave up his guaranteed contract to come, and I think the reason he did it was pretty much he knew the writing was on the wall. He knew he probably didn't have many good years left. He was at the tail end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
I think he saw this as maybe his last chance to really make a difference.
Right.
You know, he was coming off a good run, very recognizable. I think instead of waiting the year or whatever those contracts up, even though he could have been sitting home collecting that cash,
right?
I think he figured he might as well just go and give it a shot.
Was he borrowing Fatu's leather jacket?
Yes.
Make a difference?
We could debate a year from now if it was a smart move or not, but at the time, it seemed pretty cool. And it actually seemed admirable on his part. It was like, wow, this guy really cares. He wants to come in here and be involved. So it was kind of neat at the time. We'll quickly see the direction it goes. But it was cool for him at the time to do.
Yeah. So a little background on Mr. Falkenberg, which is his real name. He, of course, was nothing more than a bar owner. He owned a couple of bars and down in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. I think a couple in Tampa, too. Dived into the wrestling world back in 1988. He was one of Vern Gagne's last loyal employees, managed one of the cooler tag teams at the time, one of yours and my favorites, JR, a little Bad Company action.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, most later wrestling fans, including you, remember him as driving the pink Cadillac, carrying the equally awesome tag team of Rhythm and Blues at WrestleMania 6, sitting next to Peggy Sue. After that, he moved on to WCW, was a manager, managed Diamond Stud. Of course, it would eventually be obviously, Scott Hall, eventually Razor Ramon, managed a few other guys, kind of dived into the wrestling tights and wrestled himself. And had some decent feuds. I remember the one feud that used to make me laugh was the one about the lottery ticket or his money or something. And then he lost it to his wife, Kimberly. And it was Johnny B. Badd he was feuding with, I think. And then his like tights were all like disheveled and he was kind of a mess. And it was, I vaguely remember that. But then, of course, he would dive into the NWO storyline. You know, he kind of would always be the free agent that the NWO would always get. They'd either get them or, they'd, you know, attempt to beat the crap out of them. Then, obviously, he would really reach the main events and then become multiple time WCW heavyweight champion. I believe, JR, he was the one that fought Goldberg at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, 98.
98, and the infamous some dumbass didn't do an approximate on the
right.
Feed, and we went to bars. So
yeah, and that they cut out, and that was a great match. They actually ended up showing and getting full on Nitro the next night.
Yeah,
that's one of Goldberg's best WCW matches. It was really, really, really good.
Mm.
And you're right; it was always cool. He was always the guy that kind of fought off the NWO and really turned himself into a star out of a kind of mid card player. Really got himself established through that rejection when they handed him the shirt and he chucked Hall over the top rope and threw the shirt back at him and then ran out through the crowd and became kind of the people's champ of WCW for a while. And eventually returned heel again, get involved in the world title picture.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he won it a couple times. But like you said, when WCW went, he wasn't at the last Nitro, right? I don't remember him being on camera at the last Nitro, was he? I don't think so.
No, he was doing an injury angle. That was during when Steiner was taking out all the main eventers.
Oh, right,
and
right.
And he was supposed to come back. They were all going to come back. And I think he was – I know he had – well, actually, was he at the – he was in the main event of the final pay-per-view, right? I think he
wasn't
was.
It,
I think it was him versus Steiner, the final WCW pay-per-view.
Yeah, he was also on that three-way. Was he the three-way with Sid when Sid snapped his leg? Wasn't it him, Sid, and Steiner?
Well, Greed is the last show, right? Yeah, Steiner
right.
beat him.
Super Bowl Saturday. Super Bowl Saturday.
Well, hang on. We'll go one by one. So Steiner beat him. Agreed. That was his last pay-per-view match, and that's when he injured him. And he was going to come back eventually with all the other main eventers. Super Bowl Saturday was Steiner versus Nash.
And okay. Was it Sin then?
Steiner, it was Sin, yes, was the three-way, but I don't think Paige was in that match. No, Steiner, Jeff Jarrett, Sid, and Animal.
Oh, okay. Okay, and that's when Sid snapped his leg.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then he kind of, you know, obviously he wasn't on camera like at WrestleMania
right.
when the 500 guys were in the were in the section 950 or whatever.
Because I don't think he had even they hadn't come to the deal yet. So
yeah. Now, right after Judgment Day, when the Taker Austin feud started to fade, there were hidden camera videos on Undertaker's property down in Houston of his wife Sarah. God only knows why, but you know, walking around the pool and working out in their little gym, and you know, watering the plants and mowing the lawn, all that kind of stuff. Rumors were swirling who it would be. Some people thought it was Austin because they're trying to continue that storyline. Some people thought it was Vince.
Well, remember, it was actually Vince doing the voiceovers. Someone slowed it down and cleaned up the audio, and it was him was doing the clips. Now, obviously, I don't think anyone actually thought it would be him, but right. it was clearly his voice disguised. So I remember this very clearly. I was working at Stop and Shop at the time. Got home from work. I was recording Raw, but right as I walked in, he was in the ring and unmasking to be Diamond Dallas Page, and it was like blew my mind. I wasn't expecting you to just walk in, put Raw, and also DDP's in the middle of the ring. I was like, "What the fuck is going on?"
I know.
And so Page really teased Taker, and the whole thing was he wanted Taker to make him famous. So he challenged him that he was going to be here at King of the Ring, and Taker came out on SmackDown and said he was going to come out and whip his ass. So no match was set, but it was a confrontation was teased heavily. So the show actually starts with him coming through the crowd and taking a seat. He gets in the ring, gets on the mic, and then he goes and sits at ringside in preparation for Take, as he calls him, to come down and make him famous.
Yes. So
did you like starting the show with this? I thought they kept it short enough that it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, we had other things we had to deal with. We had other, you know, wrestling things we had to deal with. We had a tournament, title match. We had a lot of other stuff to get into. So
but,
it was
I
nice
mean,
to get this out of
might
the way.
Have had, yeah, but this might have been one of the more hyped parts of the show. I mean,
yeah,
everyone was pretty pumped to see DDP there and kind of had that feel now that the invasion was finally getting going. So I think there was a lot of excitement to this. So I can't say it was like killing the crowd off the bat. And he keeps it quick. I mean, it was good. He didn't talk that long. He only talked for a moment. Took a seat at ringside. So on the surface, maybe it seems like a weird way to start the show, but the way they executed it, I thought it was fine.
Yeah. No, it was fine. I'm just glad they got it. You know, it was more succinct. Would it have been a different thing, JR, if they had done the unmasking here instead of Monday before?
No, I liked the Raw moment to tease this.
Okay.
I don't know. It was kind of because it kind of you weren't really expecting it. It's not like they had teased that he was going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was anyway. I think I'm pretty sure it was a surprise.
Okay.
Yeah, I was fine with it. I liked it. I liked because now you're setting it up. Well, I guess you could have set it up by. So what are you saying? They would have advertised that they were going to reveal him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess either worked.
Either worked. Would have been different if it was a surprise. If he just came out.
Well, how are you saying it? Does he unmask himself, or does Taker come out, beat him up, and rip his mask off?
No, he unmasks himself. Same thing on Raw.
No, it would have been the same thing. I mean, we just would have known it was coming. That's all.
Okay. All right. So he. He says that his personal collection is a little more, shall we say, R-rated.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he pretty much baits Taker into coming in the ring and making him famous. So then he takes a seat and he sits...
Do you think Paige was... like, were you excited? Was that like a big name to you to come in?
Absolutely. No, I like DDP. I was very happy he was here.
Cool.
A, because I wish they had treated him a little differently. At least I was hoping here... From here, he would be elevated to maybe main event status.
Oh, yeah. Well we're going to talk a lot about the use of Paige over the next couple months. And disgraceful in its own way. But we'll get into that. But I think he did come in as a pretty good name. One of the few real stars, I thought, left in WCW. You know, you had Sting and Flair, obviously, and Steiner and, I guess, Sid and Nash. And I think you know, DDP and Booker T were two of the ones that were kind of right in that next cusp, and I thought Paige was a pretty well-known name at this point, so I thought it was pretty cool to have him come out here, really the first big name we've seen from WCW show up.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was hoping that from here it would go to... I mean, I was excited for this for him coming in. The feud, I really didn't care. I was just kind of waiting. In my opinion, I was waiting it out until he got put into something a little juicier. So, but again, we weren't sure where we were going with the WCW situation from here. So, all right, let's dive into the card. We got a lot of other guys we want to get into. So,
truncated tournament here this year. Back to We had the three rounds the year before, so now we're back to two. And 2000 was the final time we'd have the full three rounds on pay-per-view. So now here in the next year, we're down to two rounds again.
Yes, and we'll, as always, get into the qualifiers in the mm-hmm. first round. In our first round, JR.
It's a lot slower than most of Nicki Minaj's songs, but
I know. But I thought it had a lot of pathos to it. Of course, that is what would a great schlocky Kurt Angle tribute song be without some Barbra Streisand? And believe me, there's more to come. All right, so your boy looking to go back to back, JR.
Mm-hmm.
First time in King of the Ring pay per view history. I don't know if
let me ask you this: is this the first legit threat we've had? Like. I mean, I think it's happened before. Has the King been in before? Well Shamrock, 98 to 99.
Yeah. Owen, 90. No. We can't do Owen, 94 to 95. Mabel, no. Steve, no. Hunter, no. Yeah. Shamrock.
Well, Hunter was technically in the tournament. He just lost in the TV round.
Right.
So I guess Shamrock is really the first King to be in two straight pay-per-view tournaments.
Right.
So I'd say Angle's probably the first guy that we've really looked at as having a legit repeat chance.
Yes. Yep.
Because I don't think Shamrock, anyone really thought he was going to win again in 99.
No, obviously not. And with Kurt being so high on the card, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that he would want to win a second straight
Right, I think it was entirely possible. I mean, you could kind of see where they were probably going to go with it, but I don't think it was totally out of their own possibility because, you know, he's in the tournament and then he has a singles match later that we'll talk about. But to me, it wasn't really that out there that he may win the tournament for the second year and use that to build to the singles match at the end of the night.
Exactly. And, you know, again, he was the guy with the chops to do it. So his opponent, a good friend.
Better enemy.
Ooh, and that is, of course, fellow Eck member Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a weird tournament in that the final four are all team Wreck. If you remember,
yes.
This is the fourth guy added in, so all buddies. Yep. It all ostensibly heals, so, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Kind of weird twist on this.
How did they get here, JR?
Kurt Angle, in the qualifying round, defeated Hardcore Holly. And then defeated Jeff Hardy, who had actually defeated his brother Matt in the preliminaries. Mm. And then the qualifying round, Christian defeated Kane. Mm-hmm. And then the Big Show. So two big wins for Christian. Big Show had defeated Raven in the qualifiers.
Mm.
Pretty big wins for Christian there. Kane and Big Show.
How low is a couple of main event guys sunk, huh?
Right.
Kane goes from a big chain match win over my guy to win the IC title. And then he's freaking losing, jobbing out in the tournament.
Yeah, not even on the show.
Yeah. Had he lost the belt yet? Might have been. No, you know, it might have been the night after this. I think it was the night after this. We'll talk about it at the next pay-per-view. I think it's the night after this he loses the IC title. Pretty sure.
I thought it was on SmackDown he did.
I thought it was on Raw he did. I'll take a look. All right, so there you go. So Kurt Angle, Christian. Good match. That's kind of intriguing about this one because you've never seen these two together in the ring against each other. So and Christian did a fairly yeoman's job.
The only problem was not much question here. So
oh,
it really
no.
wasn't a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, no one really... Well, I guess it was a chance. They were starting to tease a little bit of tension with Edge and Christian, so there was an outside chance we may get them fighting in the final, but... and maybe you have, you know, Shane McMahon come out and cost Kurt Angle the match. So I think maybe there was a little bit of possibility there. Just, you know, something that could happen. So Kane... Yes, Kane loses on the June 26th SmackDown. Aired June 28th.
Okay, so that week, though. Okay,
yeah.
So it was that week. All right. And we'll talk about who he loses to at the next fall. All right, but again, pretty good match. Nothing ridiculous. Angle, of course, wins with the Angle Slam. A little over 8 minutes, but again, pretty good. Nothing too bad. And Kurt does move on. He's one win away.
Well, we should mention. So Shane comes out,
Yes.
Gives the assist to Kurt. Now, many figured he may cost Kurt the match, but he actually helps him. And everyone slowly throughout the night kind of realizes why. And that is because obviously Shane wanted him to fight a second match to be even more tired for theirs. So. Yes. But they don't all like initially get it. It's like the commentators slowly realize it, then Kurt does, and then it's like an evolution throughout the show.
Mm-hmm. Pretty solid, though. Good psychology there. I like that. Absolutely. So there you go. Kurt Angle moves on. He is one win away from becoming the first back-to-back King of the Ring champion. All right. Heyman gets up, walks over to where DDP is sitting, mm-hmm. and went on the Titantron. Well, they're talking, and then all of a sudden they go up at the Titantron, and DDP is walking into some, I don't know, Tim Horton. I don't know if it's Tim Horton's in Jersey. I don't know. Some hoagie shop or something. And he's being stalked.
Mm-hmm.
And he's he's not thrilled about it.
No.
Tables like the shoe in the foot. Yeah. Talks about how he wanted Taker to make him famous so he could use that to propel him to the top of the card. But DDP not pleased as he sees himself walking into a Shoney's or something.
And I like the stuff with Heyman, too. He's like, you know, do you like that? And Heyman's like, frankly, this all makes me very uncomfortable. I don't like any of it. He's very dramatic about it, but
it's pretty fun.
Good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have our second semifinal match of the evening as we continue on with the team Wreck as we have the other half of the former tag team champions, Edge, taking on their new buddy that, of course, debuted at WrestleMania and has been a awesome hardcore champion, and that is Rhino. How did these two gentlemen get here, JR?
Edge defeated his buddy Test in the opening round and then defeated Perry Saturn, who had defeated Steve Blackman. Rhino defeated Taz and then defeated Tajiri, who had defeated Crash Holly.
Okay, and again, nothing totally offensive. Actually, not a bad match.
It was all right, and we should plug here, this is the one that Chad Campbell did his Vintage Vault previewing for. That's up right now on PlayStation.com. And he kind of mentions this, and I was thinking it too when I was watching the show. Do you think having him all heels on this in this tournament really hurt things? Like, I feel like the crowd, I mean, they never really had to be into Edge yet. He wasn't really, getting himself over big outside of the team. You know, like, the crowd wasn't begging for a face turn. So, right. You almost don't know who to cheer for in this. I feel like it hurts a little bit of Edge's momentum. He gets the win, and this, you could argue, is probably his biggest singles win to date as a wrestler here in the WWF. But I don't know, do you feel like it hurt it? Do you feel like the buzz isn't really there for this?
Yeah, I do. I understand that they're leaning obviously towards a Edge face turn, but I think they were trying to make it almost too organic, where it's like, oh, let's just feed him to the audience and see if they'll just start cheering him now. I know they want to. Let's see if they'll try it now. Probably not ready for that yet. I don't think they've really worked it yet for Edge to be the big baby face just yet. To take away from this match? No, absolutely not. It's a pretty good match. A little under 9 minutes.
Yeah, that's all right.
Edge hits his finisher. Nothing fantastic, but not bad. But I think I think they were almost being too organic. If that makes any sense, almost like they. They're not forcing you to like Edge. You're just kind of sticking him in there and let the fans kind of do what they want. But you really haven't totally set it up yet for the fans to cheer him yet. So you're obviously making it too organic to where you're kind of making the fans try to pull it out of air.
Right.
Rather than throw a crumb at them and see if they jump at it.
I mean, I get the idea that they were trying to legitimize him here all in one fell swoop, but it's just a little bit risky not knowing if they're going to buy in right away. And he just isn't... He's never really been positioned as a credible singles threat. Maybe if he would have... I mean, I know he gets the wins in the opening rounds of the tournament, but I think maybe if he had like a pay-per-view singles win or something in the recent months, and just sound a little bit more legitimate heading into this. I feel like he's just thrown in here and doesn't really have much heat as a face, and then you put him in against another heel, and now all of a sudden he's going to go against a guy who's a heel, but there's a risk he may get, Kurt maybe cheered more than him, even though Kurt's pretty, doing a pretty good job right now being a pretty hated heel.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, he's more loved, you know.
But even the fear of fans mentality a little funny at times, and maybe a chance of Rhino getting cheered a little more.
Yeah, I mean with the matches he was putting on, I don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility.
You know, like I said, almost too organic. Although he was not champion at the moment, a couple weeks before this show on
right.
June 12th, Test beat him for the hardcore title, so Rhino had no belt at the moment. So there you go. Your finals looking out to be a pretty intriguing match: Edge and your boy Kurt Angle.
Right, I think it's looking to be a good match in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know how much intrigue yet there is. Because if you're looking at it through the lens of, you know, 2001 at the time, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Edge really had much of a chance. I mean, unless you're looking at it through our main point of view at the time, as someone who's, thinks more insider-ish, maybe you look at it and think, okay, they're clearly pushing Edge and try to get him legitimized. But if you're just kind of a fan not thinking that way, I could see why
right.
you think May Edge has no chance here.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. But, yeah, you never know. You never know. So there's your King of the Ring tournament finale. We'll get back to that in a little bit. All right, next up, we have... Oh, no, he is on the show. We thought he was taken off the show. He was actually on the show.
Oh, that's right, yes.
He was on the show. And that is coming up here, your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships on the line. But before we talk about this match, JR, we have new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. For when we last left the vault, we talked about what happened the following night after Judgment Day, where the two-man power trip lost the tag team titles to the Canadian Chris's, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho. And, of course, we all know what happened to Triple H's leg. But before this show, there was a change. And we have new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. And it was on the 6/21 SmackDown. So the go-home SmackDown before this show, with some help from the World Wrestling Federation champion, a Team JR that hadn't sniffed the belts in, Jesus, it seems like ages, the Dudley Boys, Bubba Ray and D-Von.
Yeah, this kind of came back out of nowhere. I remember we were just talking about how they were kind of deep push at the last show.
Yeah, I know. But finally, after, I don't know, really not touching the belts, I mean, they won them. They obviously lost them to at the Triangle match at WrestleMania 16, but really, have they had them since? Well, yeah, they won them at WrestleMania.
Yeah, early on,
they had the King of the Ring. Yeah, they won them at the Rumble. And did they have them going into 17? No, I don't remember. No, I don't think they did. Yes, they did.
Yeah, they had them.
Because it was that fault. Yeah. So, okay, so they had
them. Well, they did all the trading back and forth, remember?
Right. Yep.
Spike and Rhino and everything.
Spike and Rhino, those guys, right. And speaking of Spike, he's back in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Taking on his brothers and his partner in this match is your still World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. And that is, of course, we already mentioned him earlier. He lost qualifier, the King of the Ring tournament, and that is the Big Red Machine.
It's gotta be Kane!
There it is. I don't know how many more things I had to stretch out there.
Well, I don't know. I'm used to you dragging things out incessantly.
Well, it's either that or you usually bury me with it, so I was wondering, waiting to be buried with it. But in any event, Kane, your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, and Spike taking on the Dudleys for the Tag Team Championships. Now, were the Dudleys heels? I don't know. Were they? Yeah, kind of, I guess.
Yeah. They had slowly started to become heel through this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were busting Spike's balls. He had started to date Molly Holly,
mm-hmm.
innocent little relationship, and the brothers did not approve because they were in the middle of a big war with Crash and Hardcore.
Exactly.
So we had family strife going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And the final nail came on 5/21 when Bubba and D-Von powerbombed Molly into Spike, who had put himself on a table to protect her from them. The fans were digging the angle big time, pop like crazy, when Molly and Spike had their first mid-ring kiss on the 6/14 SmackDown. The crowd went nuts, if you remember that.
Yes.
on Heat, Spike said he was bringing a mystery partner to battle his brothers later in the night. So,
yeah.
Family split, and the Dudleys are back heel, which I think is a good move. They've been a face since about Mania 16 now, so a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Very oversaturated during that time. Have been on TV a lot and a lot of feuds, pretty much feud with every team, it feels like. So
I know.
I think it's good to have them back being assholes. It's a role that suits them better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The match is not great. A little sloppy. There's a spot in the match I remember where Bubba Ray was supposed to get a pin attempt broken up by D-Von. But D-Von doesn't get there in time. So instead of kicking out just to save the match, he lets himself get pinned. And JR is supposed to try and explain this whole, it's like he's all fumble. It's brutal. It's really brutal. Not a good match at all. Not a good match at all.
What did you think of A, Kane and his IC title reign so far, and B, Kane being the surprise guy here? Did you think it was a good fit?
Oh, the surprise guy's fine. Surprise guy's fine. The reign, I don't remember any real defenses on TV. I think it was just a way to get the belt off Triple H. I don't think Kane. I think Kane was just lucky to be there, to be honest with you. I don't think there's been much to it. But he was a good partner for this match. You need a big guy to take some shots and to give some shots against the bigger Dudley boys. So I thought that part was fine. But the IC title reign's been. I think it was more just to. I think it was more just to get the belt off Triple H. Seemed fitting. Because I wonder what would have happened if they just had Hunter win that, and then obviously they would have stripped him and did their own thing. But I thought it was mediocre at best. And he doesn't add to his total of belts because the Dudleys win here, because eventually, after about 8.5 minutes of god-awful wrestling, Bubba Ray pinned Spike with a 3D. So the Dudley boys remain your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. Did you think it fit? I mean, you need to get Kane on the show.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, I would have liked to maybe see him defend the IC title, but obviously there's not a lot of room on this card. So this is a fine spot. I mean, I don't think anyone really thought Spike and Kane would win the titles here.
No.
But that's fine.
Yeah. So there you go.
I was glad the Dudleys were back here, and I was really into the Spike and Molly thing. I thought that was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
I agree. Honestly,
it was almost like a more innocent version of the Kurt Stephanie. It was like,
yes,
you know, it was just meant to be kind of two pure little innocent children.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. On a side note, as we detour a bit, how good JR listening to your local radio stations is Bryant Hoop supposed to be? Because they're hanging in with Notre Dame tonight. I was curious.
Bryant's pretty good this year.
Yeah, they're only down by five right now.
Yeah, no, they're pretty good. They're not a joke. They thrashed Vermont, if you remember, right before Vermont almost beat Duke. So no, Bryant's pretty good. They're solid. Okay. They've been good for the last couple of years. So last year they nearly made the tournament. They almost won their conference tournament, but they lost. So
looking on the ticker right now on ESPN, it's about 2 minutes left in the half. They're playing Notre Dame. They're only down by five. So just curious. All right, time for the finals of our tournament. Were you a bum, JR, that we're like already like the? Do you feel at this point that the King of the Ring is becoming an afterthought?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It definitely is.
Mm.
I no doubt in my mind it was. 2000 almost felt like a return to the prestige of it a little bit. But here in 01, it definitely felt like a complete throwaway. You know, just having the four matches again, the four heels. I mean, it works in the way of getting the intended guy over.
Right.
And it's one of the more talented groupings we've had. But it's clear they don't really put a lot of emphasis on being king. Like, we don't have any kind of coronation. We don't have anything. They do it the next night again, like they did in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close to being the main event. There's a few things after it.
Right.
The tournament's wrapped up in the first hour of the show. So, really,
yeah.
It almost feels like 97-ish again, when it was just kind of the backdrop to all the heavier stories going on in 98 as well. So, we've had a few of these installments similar to this. But, you could tell it was probably on its way out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But still a sense of history as this match begins, because we have Edge. But now history could possibly happen here. a little more upbeat this time.
I didn't realize Taylor Swift has such happy songs like that.
She does have such happy songs, yes. That's quite true. But with Taylor Swift and Playboy, like Belinda Carlisle.
I'm sure she will be someday.
I'm sure she will be someday.
It's not counted out just yet. She's still young.
Yes. Of course, that was the awesome Go-Go's. All right. So, your boy, looking to go back-to-back.
She was in the movie Valentine's Day. It's close to being in Playboy.
Yes.
Along with Topher Grace, Bon Jovi. Oh, no, he was in New Year's Eve. Right?
He was in New Year's Eve. Bon Jovi was in New Year's Eve.
Ashton Kutcher was Valentine's Day.
Yes.
All the Jennifers that are always in all of them as well.
Yes, yes. Spreading out that 70s show, people. Where the heck was
Jessica Biel.
Yeah. Our girl, Mila Kunis. She had him in one of those too, right?
No, she's a little higher standard. She's not usually.
Yeah, she.
Emma Watson. Was the other one Emma Roberts? She's
Emma Roberts, there. Yeah. All right. So Edge and Kurt looking to make history here. And
you know, for those that listen to Richard and the Mailman, him and Mr. Flanagan talked about reinsurances.
Mm-hmm.
I had one of my own because for some reason I was actually thinking about the movie Valentine's Day the other day, and then I put on Cinemax and it was on, some station it was on like a few hours later. So yeah. That's right in the reinsurance wheelhouse right there.
That's funny.
Right, so here's the epic cast for this beast. Came out 2010. Jessica Alba, Kathy Bates, that's your girl. Jessica Biel.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Looks like it hasn't hurt that point.
Kathy Criscuolo. Jessica Biel, Bradley Cooper, Eric Dane, Patrick Dempsey, Hector Elizondo.
Oh, God.
Jamie Foxx, Jennifer Gardner, Topher Grace, Anne Hathaway was in this one.
Oh.
Ashton Kutcher, Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
Chad's girl. George Lopez, Shirley MacLaine, Emma Roberts, Julia Roberts. Taylor Swift and Taylor Lautner, your girl right there as well, Taylor Lautner.
Jesus. Would everybody have to have the same first names? Two Taylors?
That's it.
Two Roberts? Was Jake Roberts in there too?
Yes. Jesus. All Roberts family.
Daddy, I'm not working with Julia Roberts. Okay. The match is... Christian, of course, slowly showing his envy for Big Brother, tries to help out here, but he kind of, quote, helps Edge, but we know that he's probably intentionally trying to botch it, so he tries to cost him the match. Shane is more successful. Shane McMahon comes back out because now he doesn't care if Kurt wins. He already had to wrestle the second match, and this match,
right,
a little over 10 minutes, 10:21.
Yeah, and he screws him here because he doesn't want him to win. He wants him to get pissed off. He just wants him to go an extra 10 minutes, which he does with Edge.
Right.
So let me just ask you this. So Edge ends up winning with the Impaler after Shane comes out and costs Kurt. Do you think this tournament and this match did what it was supposed to do and make Edge legitimate?
Yes and no. I almost think this was more to enhance the Edge Christian feud more than Edge specifically. I think being part of the bigger storyline throughout the rest of the calendar year helps Edge more than this, in my opinion. I think this was more used as a tool to push Kurt and Shane.
That's an interesting take and one I agree with. I do think they were trying to get Edge over with it, but I agree with you that it came off as just being a way to force Kurt and Shane forward. I think you're dead on with that.
So, but Edge is your 2001 King of the Ring. Now, let's look at the batting average. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to ask you next.
Oh, well, let's look at the batting average of what we have so far. Well, Brett plus. Although, I mean, he was already a stud at that point, but that was a consolation prize for getting fucked over in Vegas. 0-94 definitely helped.
Mm-hmm.
We'll skip the next one.
But let me say this.
It helped him.
It helped him, right?
It helped Mabel specifically. Did nothing for the promotion.
I mean, you're going to look at these in two different ways.
Right.
Is it a bad idea because of the quality of the follow-up that we're going to get? Or is it a bad idea because they botched the future of the winner? And I think Mabel, I don't think his future was botched. I just think he was not that good. So, at least at the time. So I think that hurt it more than anything. I won't disagree with the idea of what they were trying to do. They just picked the wrong guy. But I think you can definitely say it helped turn him in from just a kind of a tag team joke to at least a threat as a heel.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. All right, so let's look at it that way then. We'll talk about did it help the person and did helping the person help the promotion. So let's start from the beginning again. All right, 93, Brett didn't matter. Brett was already a stud. 94, did it help Owen? Absolutely. Did having Owen there help the promotion? Absolutely. You had an awesome summer with him feuding with Brett. No problem there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Did it help Mabel? Yeah, specifically it helped Mabel. Did it help the promotion? Absolutely not. Nobody cared. 96, obviously. Did it help Austin? Yeah, because obviously he cut the promo.
I don't think there's any question about it.
Of course I did.
That's what made him.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, there's an interesting what if someday. Say he doesn't cut the promo. Just winning it would have just winning it and then just cutting some average promo been enough? Or was
the promo was what made him. I mean, I think he was going to be a star either way. The King of the Ring just kind of launched him because then if you look, he was deep pushed for a few months anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But still, helped him that they could go back and use
that. Of course. And did him in that spot help the promotion? Well,
yeah, I'd say so.
97. All right. Did the win help Triple H? I can honestly tell you, maybe.
Yeah, I think he could have gone without it and wouldn't have mattered. Yeah, it was a weak tournament anyway.
Yeah.
It helped build his resume, though. It didn't hurt him, we'll put it that way.
No, it didn't hurt him, but it wasn't like, oh, my God, this is huge. And did him winning help the promotion? Well, I mean, not really because he was in an awesome feud with Mankind anyway. So being in the finals of that tournament just kind of helped the two of them. It just was a slot for the two of them at that pay-per-view.
Right, it kicked off the feud, really. It
kicked off the feud, yeah. But did them being in the tournament, did it matter? Yeah. Jury's out. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I didn't think it really mattered.
Well, he lost in the first round anyway. And then it
came back. Exactly. Yeah.
So it was kind of goofy.
All right, 98. Did it help Shamrock?
No.
Not really. Not really.
No, he was kind of the same before and after. I mean, it helped perpetuate his tournament tested idea of him.
Yeah.
But I can't say it really skyrocketed him right
there. No, not at all. And did him being in that slot help the company? To a certain extent. And I think indirectly, I don't think it helped Shamrock. I think it helped Rock.
I think it helped Shamrock in the way of they could solidify him as a tournament thing, and that came into play later in the year.
Yep.
With the IC tournament. Helped perpetuate the tournament tested thing. And I thought they were able to actually make the tournament pretty legitimate that year by having him and Severn in there. They played up the UFC stuff and all that. So I think he was an important person to be involved in that tournament. So, yeah, I would say it helped.
Yeah, I think it helped. And obviously 2000.
Well, you skipped 99.
I mean, 90. Well.
Oh, well, again, a guy that it's almost very similar to Mabel in that it helped him.
Do you think so?
Well, Mabel's boy Triple H didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Was coming anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think he's actually been hurt by winning King of the Ring.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Kurt was one of the ones that helped. Quite a bit, because everyone's already looking at him as maybe king of the upper mid card, and that kind of helped. All right, so let's do this now. I'm going to go back to 93.
Okay.
Tell me if the right guy won, and if not, who should have won. So 93, was Brett the right choice?
Well, if... It kind of sucks. The drawback of Yoko being champion instead of a babyface is I would love to have seen Bigelow win that tournament. That would have been awesome. And then you would have had a good heel Bigelow as number one contender. But the fact that Yoko was champ, unless you turn Bigelow face there, I think what screwed a bunch of guys in that tournament was they obviously weren't sure what to do with Luger yet. I mean, obviously, they didn't turn him till the following month.
Right.
Only guy I could have seen winning that tournament that could have propelled him was Perfect. And then instead of having Perfect and Shawn at SummerSlam, you could have had Perfect and Yoko. And I think that would have been a pretty good match.
Well, I think the thing, too, with Brett was it helped legitimize the concept out of the gate.
True, yeah.
He
helped it.
Right, Perfect would have been a good winner, but Brett was really the guy that goes three matches, has great matches all three, and that kind of fit his character more than Perfect. I think Perfect would have been a little goofy up there with the crown and the cape. I don't know. For some reason, Brett looked okay with it. So,
yeah. And obviously, it started another feud.
Right. So. And, I mean, Perfect would have been great, too, because he already kind of had the thing going with with Waller from the Rumble, 93 Rumble, anyway, when he eliminated him. All right, 94. I think Owen was clearly the correct choice.
Yeah, he's the only guy that would have mattered, that it would have mattered to. Yeah.
All right, 95. Now, remember, a lot of the push was for Sean at the time. He seemed like a no-brainer.
And you would have had a Sean.
Well, they probably wouldn't have done that. I mean, that wasn't a stip on the line, so they might have just had him win.
No, but I mean, yeah. Would it have mattered? I mean, nah, probably not.
I don't think Sean needed it.
No. He was already the overface. They were obviously propelling for him and Jarrett in July anyway. Taker? His year sucked.
I think if you look at the guys at that time that could have been in, maybe like Jarrett could have used it more. Maybe even Savio. Well, I don't know. He went kind of goofy. Kama. I'll say Sean. I think Sean was the right choice at that time. I think they were really trying to get him over again as a top face. I think that would have been big for him.
If the corporation had some more chops, then maybe Kama, and he could have like melted down the crown and stuff, and that would have been kind of interesting.
All right, 96, no doubt.
No doubt.
The only guy I could think of maybe would have been Vader, who was actually who I thought was going to win at the time.
Right. 12 degrees in Chicago tonight.
Yeah, feels like -4. 97. I'd say Triple H is probably the best.
Yeah, that's really.
98.
Would Mick winning have done anything?
No. Mick is the eternal loser. You know what I mean? He's the guy that's always fucked.
Mick was the WWF at the time. Mick was the WWF's version of Tommy Dreamer, or Tommy Dreamer was the ECW version of Mick of Mankind.
Right.
Lovable loser, fights his ass off,
and gets hosed at the end. And that's what his face run would become. That's really the first time it happens to him.
Yeah.
And that's what his face run would become. So no, I don't think he should have won. 98. I think Shamrock or Rock would have been the best choice.
Yeah.
I thought it was good because Shamrock needed a win in that feud, if you remember the time. So I thought that was a good choice for him.
Yep. 99, probably could have had a myriad of people. You know who needed – actually, I'll tell you exactly who needed a win, a King of the Ring win. Big Show.
Yeah, they were in a weird spot, though, with him. I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if you wanted to keep him undefeated and keep his run going, I'd say Big Show. Or I always like the Xbox story. I think him overcoming the busted neck.
The injury, yeah.
And winning, and maybe Kane comes out and celebrates with him or something. I think that could have been cool. So yeah. Almost like a low-level Savage at 4 feel to it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that. And I think Kurt was the easy layup.
The only change for 2000 would have been obviously to adjust the – when we talked about this on that vault.
Right.
Was adjust the brackets and have, you know, Kurt, Benoit, Eddie, Jericho. I mean, that was the easy. Instead, you have – well, could you have done Rikishi – in the same vein as X-Pac?
No.
No?
No, I think Kurt needed. I think either Kurt's in it and wins or isn't in it.
Mm.
You can't have him lose.
Okay.
Because of where he was headed.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. All right. And, of course, we have one more of these we'll decipher, obviously, a year from now. But okay. So Kurt Angle does not win back-to-back Kings of the Ring. And
let me ask you this. Was Edge the right choice here?
Well, I've already told you that. I don't think he needed it.
Okay.
Not that he needed it. I don't think in the long run, it didn't. I don't think it helped him any. I think the story.
Well, to me, I think it helped him in that it was like the official ringing of the bell of his singles run.
Yeah.
To me, that this was like, okay, now he's a singles guy.
I think it was also more separating him from Christian to start that feud and to now organically create. His face turn.
Right. I don't know if they followed it up as well as they could have, but I do think he needed it. I do think he was the right choice here.
Right.
The only thing I could think of, let me run this scenario by you. What if they had Shane buy a slot and you put a WCW guy in and they win it?
Well, yeah, at the time, WCW was kind of the de facto babyfaces, obviously.
Right? I mean, you could have done something like that, like with a Lance Storm or a Mike Awesome.
Or any of the guys that have been on camera already. I don't know, who else was on camera at that time? I guess it was just two of them. Hugh Morris, right? Had he come out at that point?
Yeah, he'd run it.
But I mean, yeah. Kind of dig the Lance Storm thing. That's kind of cool.
I think Storm were awesome, would have been.
Awesome, Bob. I think it's like his theme. That's an interesting twist.
Mm.
You know, Vince, you know, Shane getting in his dad's face saying, you know, I want my guys in this tournament.
Yeah, you could have done half and half. I mean, to do that, though, I think you would have needed WCW to have pulled the trigger quicker to make it kind of build to that.
Yeah.
I think getting one guy in.
Show up. Yeah.
Right. I think getting one guy in could have been doable if Shane just came out and said, I used whatever, he uses money and his influence over Linda to get a guy in or something like that. I mean, they could have finagled one guy
now,
in.
Now, you could have put, I mean, and also,
you could have stacked the deck. Vince could have put him in triple threats in the opening rounds or something, and then, you know, make sure he fights like really tough guys, you know? Maybe he gets the Christian path where he's going to fight Kane in a big show.
Right. You know, yeah.
And then Kurt. You know, so it's almost like he's really going to run through. Actually, it kind of makes sense, too, if you put the de facto WCW guy in the finals with Kurt to set up Kurt versus Shane later. It almost really builds to it.
Right. And you could have stuck the guys that we saw at 17, stuck them in some of the...
Even if you're not getting to the invasion part, just one guy to kind of set the stage. And now, holy shit... Instead of pilfering through the crowd into the cards so quick, you don't want to do that right away. I like having the one guy in there and saying, all right, not only are you invading us now you've won our King of the Ring. Your WCW guy is the WWF King of the Ring. Like, that would have been a really cool hook for a guy.
Mm.
Like, I think Austin would have looked better running through the tournament, but I think Storm was coming off a pretty hot run. And the whole thing where he had all the belts in WCW, like, seeing him as the king and the smarmy king, WCW king of WWF, I think they could have really done something with that. I think that was maybe a little bit of a missed opportunity, especially since Edge didn't completely need it. I mean, it helps him, but he didn't totally need it. And they could have really done Kurt versus the WCW guy in the final. Shane comes out, helps his boy win, and that would have pushed the angle along a little bit. So we'll run that one by KK next week. We'll see what he thinks about it.
Yeah, let's see. King of the Ring. Write down on our little list here, KOTR options. Even if you threw some of those guys like Chavo and Kidman, and even in the prelims, just to give them a taste.
I guess you're missing what I'm saying. I want to have just one WCW guy in to set up the push that they're going to do, and because I don't want them losing. I guess is my point.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I just want them to look strong.
Okay.
This guy comes in and wins the fucking tournament, and it's like, oh shit, we're in trouble. If you have four of their guys jobbing in the opening rounds, it's kind of like, well, who gives a fuck? Yeah.
And if you really want to stretch it on, now we're really going crazy. You could have had Shane create his own King of the Ring tournament.
Yeah, I mean, something different. I mean, but you know, I like the idea of them coming in and winning Vince's crown. Like, to me, that's, and it would almost add some more prestige to the tournament as well. Like, you've got our crown. You know, like, it's make it like an important thing. Like, you took our King of the Ring. You took our crown.
Get off our throne.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know. It just seems like it maybe would have helped.
I like that. No, I like that. I'm thinking a little bit too more. I'm looking a little more broad brush for the roster. But no, I agree. I agree. But it didn't happen. Kurt, Edge won. And there you go. He is your 2001 King of the Ring. Not a bad pick. But yeah, that's what we do here in the Place to Be podcast. Think outside the box. Come up with other options. All right. And there's a cool, for the first time, there's a cool trophy. We've obviously ditched the, there was no, right? There was no crown and.
There was a trophy. And the next night would be kind of the bigger ceremony for it.
Yeah.
But it was clear that Christian was a little bit miffed and a little jealous of what's going on here.
Right. So, all right. Next up, we have our another title match.
Mm-hmm.
And it is JR. Our World Wrestling Federation Light Heavyweight Championship.
What you looking at?
It's imaginary.
What you looking at?
Imaginary.
What you looking at?
So, Jerry Lynn pissed and moaned at Judgment Day.
Now he's gone.
Dota F New York. I want to be in a pay-per-view. I want to wrestle. I want to defend my title. All right, so we'll defend your title and you lose. On the June 7th SmackDown in Grand Forks, North Dakota, Jeff Hardy defeats Jerry Lynn to become the new World Wrestling Federation Light Heavyweight Champion.
can say goodbye. All you know is when I'm with you, I make you free.
Make that fucking ref count a 1, 2, 3. Follow me to the bottom of the card. You'll be making just your downside guarantee. No fucking pay-per-view bonus just for you. I'm gonna beat your ass the next night on Raw.
Is that in the Vince diary? Wait, no. All right. So Jeff Hardy takes on X-Pac.
X-Pac.
And but you don't look ashamed, and baby, I'm not scared. I'm singing. If we did a Place to Be podcast soundtrack, episode 275.
Okay, I don't care how much you had last night, because when you get in the ring across from me, you'll be eating an X Factor. 1, 2, 3.
Speaking of weird yes. things and getting pinned, is it weird seeing any Fast and Furious commercials now?
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a little weird. Good drive by the Cowboys there. All right, so Jeff Hardy and X-Pac, light heavyweight championship on the line.
Grand Forks, North Dakota is where Jeff Hardy won the title.
Yes.
On SmackDown, of course, the home of the WCW star Bismarck.
That's right, Bismarck. That's right. He dresses as the state of North Dakota.
Dresses as Otto von Bismarck.
Otto von, yes, and his manager, Oral Vampire.
So the hook here, Scott, the interesting thing going on,
uh-huh.
Out in the internets at this point was that X-Pac, you know, everyone thought X-Pac was this like secret mastermind, and I don't think he was, but a lot of people thought he was just really a sneaky fuck at this point. They thought one of the tricks he would use is lose on pay-per-view and then get the win back on TV, because more people saw the TV than the pay-per-view at this point. And
it's stupid.
It seems a little bit much. I mean, maybe put it on the KK list as well. It was X-Pac using his sway to pick up wins when maybe more people would be seeing him.
X-Pac sway. Boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. All right.
So,
lips are sealed. All right.
Has X-Pac had more? I feel like he's had more kind of cool little short sprint matches against good opponents than anyone else in King of the Ring history. Like, yeah, the match with Owen in 94, match with Owen in 98, and match with Jeff here in 01. Now, every few years he pops up and has a good short sprint match, and this is another one here.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, it's pretty solid. I mean, just over 7 minutes. Jeff retains the light heavyweight title with the win, hits the Swanton. Good match, though. Nothing crazy. I'm trying to remember if there's any run-ins. Probably there probably was. It was a close finish, though. X-Pac hits the X-Factor.
X-Factor.
And literally, like, Jeff got two toes on the bottom rope. Right. I really thought X-Pac was winning the match here. But it's a fun match, and I think this just almost as much JR as Edge winning the King of the Ring. I think this was a kind of a watershed match for Jeff, to a lesser extent. But this is kind of a watershed match for Jeff, kind of, you know, his own singles title pay per view match. You know, he won the IC belt from Triple H, but that mm-hmm. didn't last long. And I think here, again, to a lesser extent, this is almost a watershed match for him. You know, pay-per-view title defense, no mat, no tag team affiliations, just a solid singles title defense. You know, things right up our alley that we like. Solid singles title defense. And I think almost as much as Edge winning the King of the Ring, this is almost a watershed match for him.
And to my point earlier, X-Pac would defeat him the next night on Raw to win the light heavyweight title.
Exactly.
In front of more viewers. I agree with you, though. It was a nice win. It was a big win. It was it's funny because the Hardys and Edge and Christian have been really our go-to teams here, and now all of a sudden they're all kind of splintering off. You know, Matt's the European champion, Edge is King of the mm-hmm. Ring, Jeff's light heavyweight champion. So it's kind of like all these stalwart teams now are finally being developed. It's almost like when the Rockers and Hart Foundation all kind of split up around the same time.
Right.
Similar kind of feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Jeff Hardy retains the light heavyweight title here, and then, as mentioned, loses it the next night to X-Pac. All right, backstage, your World Wrestling Federation champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin, runs into Commissioner Regal's office and frantically tries calling Vince. In the days leading up to the show, Vince made it clear that he would not be at the show and that Austin was on his own to defend the belt and earn Vince's love. As much as the... Well, I would laugh too, because... I appreciated the heel turn being executed at WrestleMania with, you know, wanting Vince's help and wanting the title bad. This is where the whole Vince thing with Steve, I thought, got a little overboard.
I'll agree with that. I loved the symbiotic relationship they had. I really liked Austin and Vince and him trying to win his approval. I thought this was overkill on this night in particular.
Now he's acting like a goof.
He's acting, you know, like Vader in that Boy Meets World episode. He desperately needs his son's tips. It's like, you're Steve Austin. You've won how many titles? You've been dominant. Now you can't wrestle without Vince here. And I mean, they could have just done it once and got the point across and Austin be pissed, but they just keep he just keeps begging for him to show up, and he's like almost on the fucking verge of tears. Yeah. And I mean, I get it. I liked the idea of Austin fighting for his attention, for his love, and everything. Like, that whole part of it was really cool. This was just a little bit too much.
It was a little bit too much. It was getting a little mushy.
Him being upset, like he can't even fathom Vince not showing up. And I kind of like the whole Vince part of it, though, where he said, you know, if you don't win, basically you're dead to me, kind of thing. if you don't retain your title, you're fucked. I don't care what you say or do. You're out of here.
That continues on throughout the match, throughout the evening. So this continuing, this other situation continuing is DDP is now being spied on. As he's walking around the arena earlier in the parking lot, he's seeing himself in like the catering, and he's being spied on. And DDP's had enough, so he hops the guardrail or hops the barrier, gets in the ring, and says, "All right, Taker, enough's enough now. Enough of this crap. Make me famous." Well, Undertaker finally comes out, and we thought we'd get a good throttling of Taker. Of DDP by Taker, and instead it's just it's bad. It's rolling around, punches missed, and even he didn't like it. It was awful. It was the worst looking Taker beatdown I think I've ever seen in my life.
It was a fucking just.
It was
pure,
awful.
Unadulterated job out.
Yeah, it was awful, but it wasn't even good job out. It was embarrassing, terrible. I don't think Taker ever sunk lower in anybody's heart and minds than here.
Well, it was a tricky situation because it... you needed to have... Taker needed to get revenge from what DDP had done.
Yes.
The person had done, okay?
Yes.
But you're bringing in this brand new character, and the feud's not ending here. So to do this made no sense. Because now you make DDP look like a real puss. So,
yeah, he did.
The only thing he can do is videotape a woman from hiding spots all creepy and then just get the piss beat out of him by her husband. It just is like, it would have been better if he lured Taker out and Taker started to beat him up and then an associate came out and helped DDP.
Yeah.
Like he was a mastermind. He had a guy ready and then they beat the crap out of Taker. And now you build more heat.
Yeah, that would have been better.
This just made zero, zero sense.
Nope, didn't. All it did was make Taker look like a fucking asshole. Again. And,
I couldn't stand this. I mean, it was, like, and the DDP runs off.
Yeah.
Sarah's filming it. It was just, I mean, look, if you had a guy in the roster already and you wanted to blow the feud off, this would have been fine. But to beat on a debuting guy that could be a player for you just made no sense. It really made no sense. Do you think this is worse than Taker's transgressions from a year ago?
Yes, much worse.
Is this worse than Barry and Kurt at Fully Loaded?
Yes. Kurt, look at Kurt now. Kurt rebounded from that. Because Kurt was a bred WWF guy
right.
Who could bounce back from it. you need to get DDP hot to this new crowd, you know, because not everybody watched WCW. So you need to get him kind of established. And instead, you've turned him in, he's another fucking stiff from that other company.
Yeah.
This might have been the first step in what everybody started saying was the whole, we're all here. We're, you know, I bought the company just to fucking shit on all the guys on it. This was the first step. First step. Instead of doing what was good for business, which was utilizing the upper mid-card guys and their main eventers and make your business better, instead you wanted to be the big baby who got picked on, and now it's time for me to get my revenge, and instead you're blowing it with your company. So this was the first step. Not necessary.
I just heard that DDP has gotten zero physical licks in.
Yep.
It was all this
weird.
It
didn't even look good. It was like slap punching. It was bad. It wasn't even good fighting.
And they could have had a midget do what DDP did.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, that's how physically, unsubstantial he looked, whatever the word is. Inconsequential? I don't know, whatever. Against Taker. Like, that's how useless he looked. Like, anyone could have done what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have. But,
to DDP? No.
No, just anyone.
Oh. So there you go. So mercifully that segment is over.
Yes.
And now we get down to, we are down to the meat and potatoes. But we're going to take a break. Got a nice analysis of the King of the Ring tournament. I'm glad we did that. Curious to hear some people's thoughts on that on maybe the chats page and Place to Be Nation. But we'll take a break. When we come back, we've got the big street fight and your World Wrestling Federation Championship match. First, though, a word from everyone. Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu, and there they are, with the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts. Of course, besides Chad and Parf, we have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and The Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Coffin at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
Fourth pack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Guess who's see it, the bad boys are wrestling. Testing competition when the war does their mission. Not no mercy, see the rings like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the Wolf Pack. Here to prove a point, number one, just believe that you don't want to test it with them. I'll be there for.
I wanted to replay that line because I feel like that's the Rotella line right there. I've never seen a beast with quite so little hair.
On his head.
Yes.
Oh. All right. Lot everywhere else, though.
Ugh. Okay. We are here, chatting King of the Ring 2001 from the Meadowlands in New Jersey. We got a couple matches left. Let's quickly, Scott, though, hit PlayStationNation.com because we had a pretty big day. A lot of really high quality.
Yes. Very much so.
Pieces. Games of the Generation, 2006 to 2013, Maurice Pogue. The culmination of his piece from earlier this month, or last month, rather, looking at all the different gaming systems and games of those years, this generation, as the title says. So if you're into gaming, that is a must-read from Maurice. Another must-read from Stephen Graham, his second wrestler snapshot, looking at Dustin Rhodes, also known as Goldust, kind of one of the hottest wrestlers in the world right now, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much.
If not one of the best. And the way Stephen does this is he looks at five matches from throughout a guy's career, and breaks them down and reviews them and kind of looks at the evolution of them as a wrestler. So he starts at one of his earliest matches, looks at a natural match, a couple of Goldust matches from his initial run, and then the closing out with a recent Goldust match. So definitely check that out. Steven's a great match analyst and really does a good job kind of looking through the career of Dustin Rhodes. New writer here, Wayne May, longtime PTB podcast listener,
mm-hmm.
looks at the 10 greatest hip-hop albums of all time. Some of my favorites are on there. Got some Nas, some Biggie, some Wu-Tang. I won't spoil it from you, but if you're a fan of hip-hop, check that out. Wayne runs through his 10 favorite, and you can get to us on the Facebook page and let us know your 10 favorite if you agree or disagree with Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Campbell's Vintage Vault previewing, as you mentioned. Edge versus Rhino, the King of the Ring semifinal from the show we're talking about. Jeremy Nichols' House of Horror, Zombie from 1979. The Kings of Sport, we're back with another episode. Talk about Mike Tomlin's Fine. The pathetic Brooklyn Nets,
yes.
Who you chose to be in the NBA Finals, by the way,
yeah.
If you remember.
God, oh my Jesus, yes, I do remember.
Not looking too good there. We talk about USC as well. Answering the 10 count, a new episode, as well as all your favorite reviews and recaps, Matt Petticoat and SmackDown, Steve Willey and Impact, Ryan Everett with Main Events, and you have, of course, Dan McGinn with his shows as well. Russell Sellers has been a comics beast in the middle of our staff that is already robust.
Mm-hmm.
And he's here as well, talking new hotness, December 6, 2013, all the newest entries that you should be having for your comic book collection.
Yes.
Josh Richards' Once Upon a Time reviews continue. The Howard Traveling Fanboy, Secret Origins, Nick Duke and Greg Phillips. More Sellers with the Sellers Points. Talks about if Wonder Woman should have been a solo heroine first before being part of the new Superman movie. So that's a good piece there if you're into the comic movies or Superman or Wonder Woman. Definitely check that out, too. A lot of great... Our comic stuff is right up there. I think our wrestling and our comics are really two of our strongest points on the site.
I agree, 100%. Yep.
And gaming's right up there, too. But I think our comic stuff is really hard to beat around the internet. Just a lot of interesting topics, a lot of unique topics, a lot of positivity and criticism where needed.
Mm-hmm.
And very intelligent writing, I think, across the board with our comic staff. And that includes all the guys, Greg and Nick and Tim Capel, who just joined us. And Russell and Todd Weber, of course, all great contributors, and they do a lot of group pieces, and just nice synergy we have amongst that team. Grapple Talk had a very big episode. Pat Barry and Brad Wharton were interviewed by Callum Leslie, so please get in and check that out. We'll get a lot of pub on that over at sharedog.com, and a few other sites as well. I talked about my Friars, newest installment there, about how they can't catch a break anytime they look to be turning things around. Shit happens and things go bad. They did pick up a nice win over URI on the road, and then they have some time off now before they get Yale next Tuesday night. So, also, Todd Gessling did a piece on the BCS curtain call.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the final year of the BCS championship style of college football, deciding of a champion there. So he talked about that. Total Divas, watching Total Divas. And, of course, our power rankings there. So that gives you kind of the last week at placetobenation.com. We have a lot of Christmas content coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of TLC kind of title unification stuff coming with Andrew Reich. We have Starcade stuff coming, year-end, year-in-review for wrestling and music and comics. A lot going on at the end of the year here around Christmas and kind of closing out the wrestling year as well. So please visit, of course, PlayStationNation.com.
Indeed.
Okay.
Get back and, to And will anyone do an essay on what they're looking more forward to? Stockade at Christmas?
A little essay!
Stockade! All right. But that's for Chad and Parv. Here we're talking King of the Ring 2001. And now, after falling just short of his quest for back-to-back, your boy, one more shot in the ring. We take the field.
A little Gwar.
Gwar!
Yes.
Hey, come on. You love the guy's travel agency commercials we played for about five episodes. So.
Whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa, whoa. All right. All right.
Well, it sounds a little bit different in that one.
Well, that's because that came out in 1982. So his face was still not
so
totally...
He carried a tune a little bit better back then.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's still touring, though. All right. Night after Judgment Day. But remember, we heard on at Judgment Day that Kurt Angle, after defeating Chris Benoit in that 2 out of 3 falls match, said he was going to have a big medal ceremony, JR, to celebrate getting his medals back from Kurt Angle's, from Chris Benoit's crotch. So
I've got 2 tickets to paradise. Pack your bags, we'll leave tonight.
It's next.
You'll have to find the original. Play them back to back. All right. So
swear,
the
next. Whoa, 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 whoa.
All right. So
this was not paradise for Shane McMahon.
No, absolutely not. So the night after Judgment Day,
yeah.
Kurt Angle was going to have a big medal ceremony, bringing back his 1996 victory. And celebrating, of course, as I mentioned, taking his new or his medals out of Chris Benoit's crotch. Well, out came Shane McMahon to kind of to spoil the party, to announce that WCW was coming back and hadn't been talked about, and it was coming down the pike soon.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt didn't really care. Shane climbed to the top of the platform and was starting to mock Kurt's teary celebration. So. And what a cool, it was actually a pretty neat visual.
Yeah.
He angle slams Shane off the platform and everything bounces. And it was actually a pretty cool visual with all the confetti flying up. And yeah, it was pretty cool. All right.
So Shane would accept the challenge to have a pay-per-view match. Kurt said he would defend his crown and then also put Shane down. On 6/11 Raw, Shane got a shot in as he sucked through the crowd and hit an angle slam after Kurt had a confrontation with The Undertaker. Did you feel like this feud was forced?
I wouldn't really even call it a feud. I would just call it kind of a one shot. Somebody good. I mean, look, they really worked Kurt pretty hard in this pay per view. I think he was the best guy to. I think he was the best guy to put against Shane here.
Mm-hmm.
Shane almost killed himself at Judgment Day.
Right.
But
do you think it just kind of came out of nowhere that Shane interrupted a ceremony to talk about WCW?
Well, I mean, Shane was obviously anti-WWF at the time. He was obviously purchased WCW, and Kurt was one of the more high-profile guys. I don't know who else, if you even wanted to have Shane in a match at all, I don't know who else you could have put in this spot. Who else could he have wrestled?
Well, man, my point is you don't even have Shane in a match. Like, what did it accomplish having him in a match?
Oh, nothing.
It didn't really do anything. I mean, it gives us a fun match and a crazy match. It doesn't really accomplish anything.
Psychologically, why bother? You know, what was the point?
Right. It doesn't add any credence to WCW. It's not like Shane's going to be wrestling for WCW. And at the end of the match, JR even says, you know, I think we've seen Shane's last WWF pay-per-view match of all time.
Right.
Teasing that he's going to be a WCW guy. So it's not like he was expected to compete for WCW. So to me, it really made no sense. It's like Kurt owned the WWF. So, like, why is Shane already beat Vince? To me, that he should have went out on that note, you know, and then launched WCW. To me, this doesn't really gain anything. It just seemed like a force for you just to give Shane another spot fest.
Yeah, probably. However, at least this time, he was in the ring with a guy that can kind of help carry him. He wouldn't have to go too crazy. It's a fun match. I mean, they're doing big moves all over the place. Obviously, in this match, you didn't have to do a 90-minute or 90-foot drop to the floor.
Yeah, but I would argue the stuff that happens in this match is even fucking crazier because the match goes 26 minutes, and the first half or so is pretty just basic brawling all around the ring, and Shane gets a lot of shots in, which I guess is okay because, you know, Kurt had already wrestled two matches. Then they go to the aisle, and that's where things get bizarre. So Kurt grabs Shane in a belly-to-belly overhead suplex, throws him into the glass pane, only it doesn't break. Now, these glass panes are set across the entranceway. First one doesn't break, so Shane just bounces off it and smashes onto his head on the floor. Kurt picks him up again, chucks him through it. This time it breaks. Glass goes everywhere. Shane's bloody. Kurt follows him in. Then he back belly-to-bellies him again. Doesn't break. Then he throws him through it. Just fucking chucks him through it. And it was just ugly, ugly stuff. I mean, Shane is just bloody, bleeding everywhere. Glass is everywhere. He's already taken a couple nasty bumps on his head. And to me, this is where it should have ended. Kurt picks him up, throws him on a big rolling cart, wheels him to the ring, and should have just beat him there. Then Shane kicks up and actually starts fighting back, which I thought was absurd. They end up on the top rope onto a big board, and then Kurt does a top rope angle slam for the win. I have a few beefs here. One is that I don't care if Kurt had wrestled, you know, 16 minutes earlier with Edge and Christian. There's no reason Shane should have lasted 26 minutes with him, kicked out of getting thrown through two plate glass windows after nearly having his neck broken, and then only loses to a super angle slam. I mean, I don't know. It felt like a bit much. It just felt like complete overkill to have Shane. I know Shane's been positioned as a tough guy, and I like Shane, but I thought this was just a little bit too much. I mean, the match is fun, and it's sick. It's the stuff that they do. To me, you could argue it's one of the grossest WWF matches of all time.
Mm-hmm. I think it was also establishing Kurt down the line, too. I think I think a lot of the booking on this show was a setup for what was to come.
Oh, it definitely
for
was.
Edge,
yeah,
for
they were trying to establish Kurt as a killer. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And he did that. And they did that. Yeah, I agree. I think it was a bit... I don't know why Shane was going this bonkers, having all these ridiculous,
I mean, it's fine if you want to have Kurt destroy him, throw him through the glass and pin him, make him kind of sympathetic. I just don't like the, I just really don't care for Shane hanging in as much as he did. I just thought it made Kurt kind of look goofy like that. I don't know. It should have ended after the glass. The Shane kicking out of that and then fighting back to me was just
that was stupid.
Much.
Yeah,
it
that was, I mean, come on.
Much.
Regular wrestlers, actual wrestlers would take longer to recover. And here's a guy who's not even a regular wrestler, and he's coming back fast and starting to punch. You know, he almost got a concussion. You know, he might have had a concussion.
Oh, I'm sure. He got tossed into plate glass windows.
Yeah,
and
his head smacked on the concrete the first time. So, yeah, we were entertained, but there was really no need to to do this. There's really no need. I know putting over Shane as, you know, the WCW guy, but this match doesn't do that. It's just a match. And other than make Kurt into a Superman.
And I think you nailed the point right there. Put over a WCW guy.
Yeah, I mean, have a WCW guy. Have a WCW guy face Kurt.
Right.
You know,
have
Shane
Mike Austin
recruit somebody. Yeah. You know? Somebody big, strong, powerful. I don't know.
I mean, I know Shane's a noted bump guy, but I just... after a while, you just can't have him keep hanging with these guys. I mean, Big Show is one thing. Big Show's a loser, but also because he had help. And he has no help here. He goes 26 minutes with no help. And for a guy that's one of your beasts on the roster, to have Shane hang with him for that long and kick out of the moves he was kicking out of, I thought was just way over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing when he's beating the shit out of Vince. It's another to beat your machine wrestler like that. Or beat on
Exactly. I agree.
I mean, thank God Kurt won. So... but yeah, I just and again in a vacuum, it's a sick match to watch, but it's a cool match to watch. I mean, it's fun,
mm-hmm.
but when you look at what it meant and who was involved, it just didn't really fit in, and I didn't really see the point.
No, I don't either. Didn't do anything for the feud. What's it do for the feud?
Nothing. Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
It really was 0 point to the whole thing.
No, there was no point whatsoever. None at all. And Shane could have freaking died. So.
Right, and that's what I meant when I said is the feud forced. So we spent 12 minutes proving the point, but
yep.
It's there. The feud was forced. It didn't really make sense. There was really no need for it other than for another Shane spot fest and to deliver a high-quality match for the show, which is fine. I mean, those are all noble reasons, but...
Yeah,
to,
but nobility is not a good answer to almost killing yourself.
No,
so.
No for no reason. So.
All right, time now for our main event, and there's a lot of discussion here as well. Your World Wrestling Federation Championship.
Hey, BTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
This is Chad Campbell with your Vincent Kennedy McMahon update. I just had to console Mark Claire in the hospital waiting room. He was too distraught to do the update this week, folks, but I was able to sneak back into the hospital room and give Vince McMahon a few words of encouragement, but unfortunately no change in his condition this week. He is still in his coma, and I don't know. It's not looking good. So Mr. Claire is all beside himself, crying away in the waiting room. But he did hand me a special tape. I know we've kind of been reminiscing the past few weeks to keep a little upbeat nature in these updates. And tonight's tape, he said, was from some Marriott in Montreal from November 1997. So I'm not quite sure what type of event this was, but let's put the tape in here and see what's going on here.
Lou Rotella, quick, shut the door, get in the room, hurry up, get Claire under the bed, I don't want anyone to know he's here, everyone get in here, now! Oh my God, I can't believe that shit just went down like that, that was the fucking biggest rush of my life! Patterson, you get the script ready, we're gonna go over it later, Brett screwed! That'll show that piece of shit try to fuck with me and take my title to WCW! I mean, I don't really care for the spit in my, what, Rotella? Your son likes getting... All right, anyway. I mean, it had to be done, guys. It had to be done. I think everyone's going to really have my back on this. I really think this is going to make me, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the biggest babyface in all of wrestling. You got a heel like Bret Hart refusing to do the time-honored tradition for a class act like Shawn Michaels? and then going down south to a promotion that no one even watches? And I'm the kingpin of the hardest promotion in the world? This can't go wrong at all. I'm out of that big, stupid contract. Just imagine like a baseball team buried with all these contracts and they find some other team to just take them off their hands. And then they rebuild and win a World Series. Imagine that happening someday. Like, say one day the Red Sox, of all teams, right? They're buried in these contracts, right? Something like that. That's what this is like. I got rid of this albatross, and now we're going to shoot to the top. And I'm going to be world champion. Biggest, you don't think it's a good idea? All right, well, Mayo, just the lead face, you know, just back in the booth as a commentator. Just kind of sweep everything under the rug. You think that works? I think that works. Claire, get the karaoke ready. We're gonna do some celebrating here tonight. Brett, fuck you. Go to WCW. Brett screwed Brett. VKM number one. Truth is, I thought the business mattered. Pro wrestling mattered. Does the Monday Night War trump everything else? I get knocked out, but I'm up again, because I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I get knocked out, but I get up again. I'm Vincent fucking McMahon. I get knocked out. I get up again. I'm Vincent fucking McMahon. I get knocked out, but I get up again. I'm Vincent Kennedy fucking motherfucking McMahon. Pissing Bret Hart away. We're pissing Bret Hart away. He told Earl to call for the fucking bell. He told the hitman to go straight to hell. He strutted to the back seeing dollar signs. Brett screwed Brett, became his tagline. Oh, Davey boy. Oh, Davey boy. I get knocked out, but I get up again. I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I get knocked out, but I get up again. I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I get knocked out, but I get up again. Sing it, Rotella. Yeah, I'm Vincent Kenny McMahon. Get knocked out again. I'm Vincent fucking McMahon. Pissing Bret Hart away. I'm pissing Bret Hart away. That shit happened to Alundra, which was a one-time blunder. He had the balls of steel. His world title's the one for real. He yells at Rotella, start up the car. Claire call the bitches to get to the bar. Don't cry for me. Just blow me. I get knocked out, but I'm up again. I'm Vince and Kenny McMahon. I get knocked out. Fuck the sharpshooter and fuck you, Eric Bischoff. I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the biggest babyface in the world. I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Fuck you, Kevin Kelly. I'm going to eat your Christmas cookies all day long. Go get your wife to make me some. Fuck the rest of you. I'm out of here, bitch. Vincent Kennedy McMahon for life. I'll see you on Raw. And all the whole roster is going to be there celebrating. I can't wait. My ear, he wanna get his fuck. I jumped on the dick, wrote his ass to sleep. He called next week, asking why I ain't keep him. I thought your ass was still sleeping. He laughed. Told me he bought a new calf. Celebratory mood?
Boy, did he get that wrong. World's biggest baby face. There's only one answer to that. Really, there's only one answer to that. That's when he was able to do it. I'm wondering if we should make like a compilation set, Place to Be Nation. Maybe next year's trivia contest, the winner gets a gets the full diaries from beginning to end.
Yeah.
So, anyway, continued. Kind of sad on this Christmas time that Vincent that VKM can't celebrate. Very sad. Anyway, he's not at the show anyway. So
no, and Steve Austin very, very upset. The night after Judgment Day, Austin Triple H defended the tag titles against Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit. Triple H ran in to break the hold, tore his quad, and they lost the tag team titles. Stephanie McMahon, Helmsley would also be off camera for a few months. Triple H gone, of course, till January. Mm-hmm. Now, throughout the night on this show, Paul Heyman and Jim Ross had been discussing rumors that were circling, intimating that Benoit or Jericho would win the title here tonight if they did, mm-hmm. and then defect to WCW.
What?
We had interviews with both, and they kind of danced around the rumor without denying it mm-hmm. to kind of perpetuate things. This is Chris Jericho's first 30th World title match on pay-per-view since he debuted in the company back in August 1999.
And in the month leading up to the show, Scott, we were treated to some of the greatest free wrestling matches ever seen.
Oh, my God.
As Austin fought Benoit and Jericho in singles title matches. His bout with Benoit on the 531 SmackDown still considered one of the greatest matches in the show's history. As Austin barely escaped with his belt. He was forced into this match by Linda McMahon and was not happy with it. He told Vince that he had to choose between Linda and himself, and Vince didn't really care for the ultimatum. Mm-hmm. Austin was a man possessed leading to the show and even assaulted Michael Cole for no reason on the 621 SmackDown. He wanted to see Austin show why he should be his choice. Mm-hmm. And Vince said he will not be at the show, and the paranoid Austin was not pleased with that decision. So that's all the build leading up to this. And Austin really kind of became the alpha dog again, even with the crying and whimpering to Vince.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how he kind of disowned Triple H. Blamed him for losing the tag titles.
Yep.
And kind of threw him under the bus and basically said, I'm done being his lapdog. And I like that because to me that reasserted him as the top dog here.
Yeah, I agree.
I was into that there. I liked the Vince stuff. I thought tonight was overkill, but I liked the stuff as a whole. Did you feel Benoit and Jericho were booked properly to be ready for this position?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I like the whole intimating on the show that they would go with Shane and take the belt to the new show or whatever the new entity. It's a fucking tragedy. That unless you can find it on YouTube or and I think I have a copy on DVD burned somewhere. I remember I had strep throat when that smack that week. I think it was that Monday. The Monday Raw was from Winnipeg, and that's when Austin fought Jericho. And then that Thursday SmackDown was in Edmonton, and that's when he fought Benoit. So they had to fight Benoit in each of their hometowns.
Mm-hmm.
And the match with Jericho is very good.
Yeah. The Benoit match was
fucking incredible.
And he was sick, right? Wasn't Austin sick for that match?
Austin was not feeling well, and he would obviously not do well. A couple guys would not do well after this match,
right.
This match here. But yeah, Austin was not 100%. Yeah. I remember I couldn't talk. My mouth was swollen.
Oh, maybe it's you that was sick that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, no, it was me that was swollen. That was me that was that.
And
was
you were working harder than either of them, right, on your couch?
Oh, of course, yeah. Eating ice cream. It's a tragedy. Well, different brand. Not much is it's a tragedy that unless you own that match, you taped that SmackDown,
yeah.
Or you could find.
Well, let's clarify. That's not the real tragedy in all this. But
well, no, the tragedy is that because of that, of one of the two people in this match, you'll never see it on like a comp or anything.
No, I still don't think that's the tragedy. I just think it's just too bad. That's all.
Yeah,
I think. Should word that a little bit better. But what did you think of the structure of this match? I liked the idea of it, but did you think it was odd to have the heel be the one outnumbered? I mean, it all went with the story of Linda putting the screws to Austin, but...
No, I thought it was fine.
It almost felt like unfair, though. Like, should we really be cheering for the two babyfaces when they have the advantage over Austin? Because they didn't really play up a ton of tension between Benoit and Jericho. It builds throughout the match, but it almost felt like Austin... You know, most of these situations, the face is usually the underdog, you know? It's just kind of weird having the one heel being chased by the two faces outnumbered in the match.
It is a little strange. But what saves, I think the underlying sidebar to this is that Benoit and Jericho are both hungry for gold and they're not willing to share. So, Austin's whole thing is you know they're gonna break. They're not gonna break. I'm an island unto myself. But right. Whereas those two are gonna, you know, they're gonna want to break each up each other's pins as much as they're gonna break up mine. And I mean that's kind of thinking within the psychology of the match itself. But yeah, having the two baby faces, you think it might have been too much of using the whole Vince is not there and he needs to earn his thing again. I mean,
no, I thought that was fine. I just didn't like Austin crying about it so much. That's all. Let me ask you this. Would you rather have seen, if you want to clean up the undercard a little bit, say we eliminate the Kurt Shane stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if we have Jericho versus Benoit and the winner faces Austin in the main event?
That might have been pretty good.
I mean, this match is solid, but it's a little herky-jerky.
It is herky-jerky.
And I think having the two faces in... It was hard to ever have a true heat segment because you have two faces in there, you know? So it's kind of weird. It's a weird dynamic. So it's a lot of just them going back and forth, and I don't feel like we really build that heat as well as maybe we could have. And I mean, it goes 28 minutes, so it's good. I do enjoy the match, and the crowd is into it. JR and Heyman do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that could have been a better way to go, and you let Benoit get the match against Austin. Rematch on SmackDown.
So you would have had Benoit, if there was like a semifinal match, you would have had Benoit win.
I think Benoit was more ready. I'll put it that way.
Okay. All right. I concur with that. That would be a pretty good that'd be a pretty good setup.
I just feel like the setup here is a little screwy, that's all.
It is a little screwy. It's kind of backwards, kind of ass backwards booking. And it's a point that I know you wanted to make.
Well, let's talk about that at the finish. But
okay.
So let's talk about during the match.
Which is good. It's, you know, good quality. Triple threats, you know, are kind of hard to, sometimes depending on who the people are, hard to book. Right.
But now we have a huge debut in the middle of the match.
Yes.
And I thought it popped the crowd. Did you think it was a good spot?
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, we got it for you, nigga!
Of course, the WCW World Champion, Booker T,
mm-hmm.
makes his debut. Grabs Austin on the floor, picks him up, chucks him through the table. Well, hits the axe kick and then throws him through the announce table.
Yep.
And
injures him.
Yes, of course. Austin would end up busting his tailbone or whatever and breaking his hand on the fall.
Yeah.
And Booker caught a little bit of shit for being, people thought me was a little bit sloppy, just chucking Austin through the table the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like this? I like this. I love this debut, actually.
Yeah, I did too.
I thought it was a nice surprise, a nice payoff to the WCW stuff. Teasing all night that one of these guys was going to go to WCW, and then they pull a switcheroo and have the actual WCW champion show up and get involved. I liked that twist to it. I thought it was a strong debut for Booker. The win taken out a little bit that Austin doesn't lose because of it, but I thought it was good that they did it early enough in the match to where it doesn't look like it backfires. He just takes him out, but then because of the triple threat nature, it doesn't help him really. But I thought it was an effective debut. I mean, there's no better guy to take out than Austin if you're having a guy debut strong.
Yeah, I think so. And it legitimizes Booker as a guy that, hey, he's in Shane's camp, and it's a guy that the WWF needs to be on the lookout for. Now, we'll go over his whole background when he actually has his first match, which isn't for, which will be next month.
Yeah.
So I think it was perfect, and it was right in the middle, and it almost gives you a sense that, oh my God, maybe he is getting hosed. But it almost kind of begs the question, is WCW going to be the babyface faction?
Well, it's weird to see the deck stacked so much against the heel. I mean, you get two face contenders in the match, and then another guy comes and takes him out. It's like, how much odds you stack against this heel? I know it's Austin, but it just seemed like real counterintuitive booking. And I think they wanted WCW to be the faces, but I think they were quickly realizing it may not work. So everything just seems a little backwards here overall. And it's like you still have this guy Austin, or you're working hard to make a heel, and then you're doing stuff like this, which is not helping the cause, you know, to have him be completely outnumbered and overwhelmed, then he beats the odds of it all and wins. So the whole thing is a little screwy. In the final spot of the match, Benoit gives Austin a back suplex off the top rope. Or it was in the middle of the top. It was off the ropes. And Benoit slams down on his neck. And
it was a superplex.
Was it a superplex? I think it was a back
suplex. Maybe, you know, he was on the second rope. He was on the second rope.
Yeah.
I just watched it on the whatever that is, DVD from whatever it was.
Yeah, so he busts his vertebrae. And finally damages his neck enough that he's forced to the sidelines for a major surgery and ended up missing a full year.
Yeah.
And it sucked because he was just getting to the point where he was starting to break through finally.
Mm-hmm.
After the 2 months kind of delay, they put them in the main event here. The ratings didn't really bear it out, and mm-hmm. the buys were kind of iffy. So people were wondering really how effective Benoit and Jericho were here and what it meant for their futures. We don't really find out as much with Benoit because he's right on the shelf. And I mean, he was a guy I think his body was ready to blow at some point. So this was just like kind of the final blow. Like, I don't think it was like a freaky injury. It was kind of like Shawn in 98. I mean, there's one spot to point to, but it was probably going to go at some point anyway.
Right. No, he even mentions on his DVD, I remember that he was feeling some tingling, and it kept hitting it and hitting it leading up to that. And he had a feeling something was going to happen, and obviously it did. So, and that ends up giving him the pin.
Right. Jericho comes out unscathed, but Austin crawls over. Kind of anticlimactic finish.
Yeah.
And this is the point I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. Is this the first time since, we'll say, Austin was pushed as a major star at, we'll call it Survivor Series 96 to me, is when they really launched him, mm-hmm. that the crowd is disappointed that he won?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, think about all the matches he's had, the mm-hmm. pops he's gotten, the wins he's picked up. This has got to be the first time.
Yeah.
That the crowd was just like kind of dejected that he won. When he gets that pin, it feels anticlimactic, first of all.
Yeah, it does.
And second of all, like people just kind of like, ugh, in the crowd, like they all kind of just sit down and no one's really cheering. And it's kind of odd. It was very surreal to me when I watched it today to see Austin kind of treated like that. Like it really caught me off guard. I wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for it either. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't think of another time, though, that he won and the fans were pissed about it. So maybe the heel turn's working. Or maybe they just like Benoit and Jericho more and they wanted to finally see some change.
Yeah, I don't think anything to do with a dislike of Austin.
In a good way. Maybe the heel thing is working, you know?
Yeah. I think more people are like, ah, why tonight?
Yeah, we want to see.
Like, it wasn't like Taker hatred right now. That was very different.
Right.
This is more like, ah, Steve, really? Why tonight? How about another night?
Yeah, I think a lot of people wanted to see Benoit or Jericho finally cash in and win. So it felt a little bit like almost like the year before, where you were giving these guys the breakout chance and they aren't able to capitalize on it. But this was a little bit different. You know, Austin's run was really just getting going again as a heel. Couldn't really take it away from him, and they had big things planned for him. So I get it here. And then obviously it would have been a disaster anyway if they had Benoit win and then he's out for the year. So that would have backfired big time. So, all right, Scott, what do you think of the show as a whole, and what do you think of it as the cap to the end of an era? Not only, I mean, two eras, really. If you look at the era of the hot pay-per-view stretch, the stretch we talked about with No Way Out 01 and Rumble 01, where all the guys are finally back in the fold, all the big names. That stretch of really hot programming, great pay-per-views, very good TV, ratings are big. To me, this ends that six-month stretch.
Yep.
It also ends, officially, kind of the competition era. I know it ended in March, but to me, this is where it officially is done. This is where the lines become blurred. WCW starts showing up and now becomes part of the storyline. So to me, this is where it really things turn around and we start this whole new kind of modern conclusion. I think the Attitude Era is still going, but we hit the back end of it and it's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And now the, just like in the middle of 2000 when you started mixing this roster up and now the disappointment starts to set in like it set in 2000. Sure, the product was hot, but I think people wanted to see the younger, hotter guys, you know, the fan favorites, the internet favorites, get their chance, and they weren't getting it. The glass was too thick. And now it's happening again, and I think it's kind of killing the buzz of what's been a pretty hot first half of 2001. The last 3 months of pay-per-views have been okay. Not great. Have had some good mid-card moments, but the main events have been a little stale. And this one was outright disappointing. So I think that the fact that the roster has not gotten mixed up enough and the guys have not had their legitimate chance has been disappointing. And I think that's where – I think fans are finally starting to catch on to that. At the same time, I think people are still anticipating what is to come because they know that the storyline's just starting. So there's a bit of anticipation, but at the same time, disappointment. If you can have both emotions at the same time, time will tell. But yeah, now the Monday Night War is officially over. And there's one king. So,
all right, final thoughts just on this show.
It was okay.
Were you disappointed?
A little bit.
For the level of talent they had and the guys involved on the show?
Yeah, for a little bit. A little bit.
I mean, Kurt Shane is very good and the main event's good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no bad matches at all besides the Taker fiasco.
Right.
But it didn't feel like, and I think Chad pointed this out, but for a show with so much at stake, it felt very ho-hum. maybe because we knew big things were coming and none of them really happened here besides Booker debuting, it feels like they were just trying to wrap a bunch of shit up before launching the new storylines.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, all right, there is your review, King of the Ring 2001. Scott, why don't we do 5 minutes of feedback? Do you have the thread pulled up?
I do.
Okay, why don't you kick us off then?
Okay. Chris Krager. Technically the weakest of the three Meadowlands pay-per-views, but compared to what those two were, the bar was a bit high for this approach. Bit ironic for two of the main players in the opener of this arena's last pay-per-view were out of the picture entirely. Triple H with his injury and China's Sableitis derailing her faster than a Matt Millen drafted wide receiver. Wonder if you're a Lions fan. Interesting.
No,
King of the Ring.
Bills fan, the long-suffering Bills fan.
Ugh, even worse. Interesting King of the Ring semifinal matchups, given the four guys involved here were storyline bros, good matches, and love the idea of Shane O'Mac, chicanery, and Kurt's matchup. Tag title match was decent, understood the Dudleys getting the belts 3 days ago, and really made no sense for them to drop them so soon, given the tag title hot potato we've undergone since Unforgiven. Good King of the Ring final with the storylines of Kurt going for a repeat and Shane again being the monkey wrench, and of course it gave us the wonderful King Edge promo on Raw with the Stanley Cup-like trophy and vacuum suck blow line. Light heavyweight title matchup was nice, necessary sandwich match given what was about to unfold. Street fight was awesome, brutal bumps, Kurt's hat trick of matches, both guys taking it to beyond. It was essentially like watching a Raven-Steelers matchup from when both teams were loaded 5 years ago. Triple threat match was not bad, but the Benoit injury was really unfortunate. All in all, nice show, but it lacked the hot crowd of 89 or that we're on the way up feel of 97. By this time, they were essentially the only game in town. Had to bring this up, but by how much percentage would a healthy Benoit Triple H have made the ensuing 5 months or so? We'll get there.
Jolly Man Big Boy making his debut here. I remembered how phenomenal Raw and SmackDown have been quality-wise leading into the show with Benoit Austin. TLC 3, Scott, which we didn't mention. Angle Benoit in the famous tag title match. Going in, I had high expectations, and what I got was okay. Of course, Shane Angle, or better yet, Kurt Angle himself stole the show. Shane landing on his head before going through the glass, Kurt cutting his arm, Kurt breaking his tailbone in the great spot off the top rope to end the match. Easily match of the night, throughout, though their feud was kind of lame. Shane interrupts Kurt's medal ceremony, awkward promo, and interferes in all of Kurt's matches for the month. Nothing interesting. I was excited. A 28-minute triple threat involving three of my favorite competitors, and when I started the match, I was getting WrestleMania 25-minute flashbacks. I don't hate it, but I liked the match, but I thought it was way too long, never picked up with the crowd, wasn't booked interestingly. It was just one guy goes outside, two in the ring. The match or story never felt like it picked up, and it was constantly stuck in the beginning phase of the match, where everything was set up, escalating to that second gear. And I didn't recognize at the time that the video packages were way too focused on Austin McMahon and Benoit Jericho were afterthoughts. And that is a very astute point. Mm-hmm. And again, you're right. It was a heavy, heavy Austin McMahon focus. I think that turned when they kind of realized the ratings weren't going the way they wanted to. I think they lost faith in Benoit Jericho very, very quickly, Scott. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that's when they started to turn the feud to more Austin McMahon. The match is remembered for being Benoit's last match and Booker's debut. I'm confused, but Benoit injured himself during the match and the match got cut short because they had been building a story of Vince was going to show up and the match just ends. Or I heard he hurt himself at TLC and continued to compete and then aggravated his injury. Was the plan for Benoit to lay himself out to have Austin win on luck? I say they keep the main event of fast, intense 18-22 and devote the actual time for an actual match. We've seen DDP and Taker. Not that it would have been any better than this. As far as the tournament goes, it was strange because the matches had to be booked so close together. I feel like three matches were forced to be short, although it's a vast improvement over the last 2 years. I feel like you can put on a competitive match somewhere in this tournament with more time taken from the main event. Shane screwing Kurt may have upstaged Edge's King of the Ring victory. Overall, show's okay. Better than Backlash or Judgment Day, I don't know. Maybe Judgment Day, but I think Backlash was more consistent.
Dave Hall. Feedback's backs, and so is the thunder from Down Under. Not a bad show, but for some reason I never felt it was great. We returned to just the semis for the tourney with a breakdown of a long-standing alliance. Angle beats Christian, Edge beats Rhino. I thought it was cool having four guys with a known connection in the semis, and Angle defending his title was great. The Dudleys have the belts back and defend against Spike and Kane. I guess they just wanted Kane on the show. Jeff Hardy relieves X-Pac of the light heavyweight belt as Jeff continues to grow in the ring. Actually, Jeff was already champ. Decent match, although X-Pac looks done. Edge takes his next step up the ladder, claiming the knightship from Kurt. The kingship from Kurt, who then goes back out and faces Shane O'Mac in a great match. Kurt really shows he has upped his game in 12 months, and he stole the show with three great performances. This, I think, was what showed he was ready to be one of the top men. Taker just craps all over a night-long angle with DDP and totally destroys him, ruining any chance of a future match happening. Why do this angle as they just have Taker destroy him? Seems a waste of writing and time. Poor DDP looked out of place as the stalker, but deserved better than the treatment that he got. Finally, Benoit and Jericho step up against Austin, but sadly the match is only okay. The focus was too much on Austin, Vince, and WCW. Also unfortunate for Benoit and Jericho, we get the Booker T interference and mishap, which leads to another Austin injury. It just felt forced for Booker to get involved. It is also Benoit's last match for a while. His injury stops his rise to the top for a while. Overall enjoyable with some good in-ring stuff, especially from Kurt, but some poor writing and booking decisions, especially relating to The Undertaker.
Corey Ferreira, good King of the Ring, better than the last 2 years in terms of quality as a pay-per-view show. One of the better in terms of actual King of the Ring matches on pay-per-view. Angle, Christian have a nice opener with Angle getting the win. Edge and Rhino have a nice match as well. I always find odd that Edge won just because he had always been positioned as a tag guy. Winning King of the Ring means they had big plans for you. The Angle-Edge match is just okay. I guess the thing this show is always remembered for is Angle-Shane Street Fight. Don't get me wrong, very good match, but I think over a decade later it's overrated by a lot of fans. I'm not taking away anything from Angle Wrestle 3 matches on the show and Shane taking those bumps through the plate glass. The main event is really solid. I'm not a fan of the heel Austin gimmick at this point. He's just a whiny SOB, which I guess is really the only way to get him heat. But I find it hard to watch in terms of his character. But in the ring, he's the best he's been since his pile driver at the hands of Owen in 1997, which seems like a lifetime ago. Benoit Jericho, both great. Booker T debuting, I never saw as a big deal made because I was not paying attention to WCW in his dying days. Just never felt like a huge thing. I mean, it's not like Hogan or Goldberg. Booker T is pretty much just a mid-card act until the end where they gave him a bunch of meaningless world title reigns. Oh, yeah, I guess I should talk about DDP and the fucking awful shit he got. Unlike Booker, DDP seemed like a big deal. Coming in, they fucked that up with an awful stalker angle with Taker and his wife. Overall, a good show in the ring, but just done in the middle of a really awful period of television, I guess. It's a good thing. There's no feedback for Backlash Judgment Day because I don't have nice things to say. I think that's a little bit wrong. I think TV was awesome at this point. Pay-per-views were a little bit shaky.
Yeah, I agree.
Meltzer ratings, 3, 2.5, 2.25, 3, 2.25, 4, 3.75. So pretty much in line with us on that one is Big Dave Meltzer.
Yeah. Bill Ritchie, while not a great pay-per-view by any stretch of the imagination, King of the Ring 2001 will always hold a special place in my heart for the simple reason that it was the first pay-per-view I attended live. I've been to lots of Raws at MSG in the Meadowlands, but this was the first time I was able to make a big pay-per-view event. Great seats in the front row of the first elevated section off the floor. We were seated diagonally behind the announce table, so we had a great view of Booker T making his big splash debut. Angle and Shane Street Fight was such an awesome brawl, I didn't mind getting stuck with one of those matches where the action goes everywhere so the live audience doesn't really get to see what's going on. Watching the glass panels refuse to break, I remember thinking, how many times are they going to try before just giving up? Of course, when the panel shattered, the crowd popped big time. I have to say, however, I'm kind of surprised that Angle didn't repeat as King, because up until that point, Angle had been making a career out of doing exactly what he said he was going to do, from winning the European title to being a double Eurocontinental champion to winning the world title. It seemed that everything Angle said he was going to do, he did, no matter how impossible it seemed. This was one of the first times he failed to reach his stated goal. I was thrilled when Sarah Stark was revealed to be DDP. That moment on Raw remains one of my favorite Raw moments to this day, but watching DDP and Taker, quote, fight at this event made it pretty clear that from the get-go that DDP was going to be nothing more than Undertaker's doormat. Overall, this was more disheartening than anything because Paige was one of the few WCW guys I really liked and was hoping would succeed in his new surroundings. Overall, I had a great time at the show. I got to see almost all the big names I liked, Austin, Jericho, Taker, Kane, Angle. Great brawl, some exciting matches, a huge debut, and X-Pac lost. All the things to look for in a show.
Dragon Rockwell. And Scott, you know what's up with Mr. Rockwell?
What's that?
Somebody's always watching him. A vast improvement on the last two King of the Ring pay-per-views. The tournament itself was reduced to just the semis and the final, and this event benefited from it. T-Mac and Rhino were a great choice for the final four, and Edge deserved the rub from winning the hilariously oversized trophy. Obviously, Carrot versus Shane's brutal brawl is the pick of the undercard, with Shane taking some ridiculous bumps throughout the glass and almost cracking his skull open on the hard glass. The finishing Olympic slam was fantastic. The rest of the undercard would have been completely forgettable if it wasn't for D-Von forgetting to break up the pinfall in the tag title match, making a very awkward moment. DDP was unfortunately made out to look like a chump by the fat phenom. Get used to it, Paige. The main event was a very good triple threat, but it failed to elevate Benoit and Jericho to the level that they've wanted. Booker T's run-in was exciting, but the finish was incredibly weak, anticlimactic, even though it later became obvious that this is to explain Benoit's injury. However, Booker T's run-in was a sign that the invasion was coming. Do you get the tie in there, Scott?
You're fucking killing me. I had it queued up, you bitch.
Oh, sorry.
Damn it.
Go back to the history of our show. I'm supposed to rely on you to have something queued up.
Well, I also have better technology. The fucking turntable's in the closet now, for Christ's sakes. I was trying to help you out, so you'd have to do both things at the same time.
I think the question is, do we read Jay Hinchy's feedback or just play the Rockwell song?
I say just play Rockwell. I say we sing Rockwell to Jay Hinchy's. No. How about we play both at the same time? Do it in stereo.
Oh, God. All right, good. Not playing with Hinchy.
Jay Hinchy, King of the Ring, not a bad show. No, sorry. King of the Ring for the Meadowlands and the official kickoff of the WCW Invasion, a pretty solid pay-per-view overall, one of my favorite shows in 2001. The final four of the King of the Ring, Team Eck and Rhino, is a good way to culminate things. Both semifinal matches are good as the finals between Edge and Kurt, with Edge kicking off the air of awesomeness. I also like Shane McMahon extending Kurt Angle another bout for their street fight later. The Dudleys retain their newly won tag titles against Kane and Brother Spike in a decent tag. Jeff Hardy, X-Pac, pretty good match for the light heavyweight title. Thought it was awesome having DDP come in as one of the first major WCW names on the Monday before in Tampa. I really think he should have gotten a one over on Taker in their brawl here and maybe set up a one-on-one match next month instead of being in the main event. Kurt Angle and Shane O'Mac tear the house down in the street fight. Shane going through the glasses was a scary but also an awesome bump at the same time. The finish is great with Angle hitting the Angle Slam off the board from the top. Triple threat's very good, and I also like the added caveat. As if Jericho or Benoit win, they would jump to caveat? If they would jump to WCW with the title the next night in MSG. We all see the debut of the WCW champion himself.
Caveate.
And putting Austin through the announce table, but injures Stone Cold at the same time. Chris Benoit also has his last match for a while here as his neck pretty much explodes and puts another name in the injured list.
Steve Rogers, all hail the era of awesomeness. Too bad this wasn't the debut of another moniker Edge would have down the road, but what can you do? Again, Shane O'Mac does a great job bumping. It sells the Angle killer intensity quite well, setting Kurt up for a great few months, even with the goofiness that was to come. Finally, something new for Austin, and the Canadian Chris's do not disappoint. All right, there's your feedback from King of the Ring 1991. That show is in the books. And Scott, like we said in the beginning,
King of the Ring 2001.
What'd I say?
1991. Wasn't that a Gillette?
I don't know. Was he there or Providence?
Did Savage win that one in 91?
No, that was the Providence 91.
Oh, okay.
So that anyways.
Anyways. It was Brett.
All right. Well, that's going to be our last vault for almost a month, I think. So
Yeah. Next
week, or I'm sorry, later this week, we have headlines. Andrew Reach is going to be with us for the whole show. We're going to look at TLC. We're going to talk about title unifications. We're going to talk about
BCS
all different
action.
Stuff like that, BCS. We're going to do a lot of focus around Cena and Orton and what it means for them to be unifying the titles and the great reigns of the brand split and everything like that. We'll do our TLC predictions, and we'll wrap things up there. Next week, Monday night, back in the saddle, Steve Willey and Brian Shields, author of the WWE Encyclopedia. And we're going to have a little... cool little concept show. We're going to look at some of the forgotten and, weird or bizarre gimmicks in wrestling history. Kind of ones maybe would have forgotten guys at different characters, maybe had different guys playing them, just different topics and stuff like that. And then Wednesday, Kevin Kelly in the house, talk about the first half, very busy first half of 2001 in the World Wrestling Federation. So that is the next week and a half here. And then we have some other things planned that we'll get to as the weeks go along. And again, we'll get to Invasion once we get into 2014, actually, Scott. That'll be the next vault. I just want to give a quick shout-out. My brother-in-law and his lovely wife gave birth to a new baby.
Oh,
I'm still awaiting details. It's their first. I don't know if it's a boy or girl yet. They weren't sure. They didn't want to find out. And still waiting. I'm getting the text in as we speak, but no details yet.
Okay.
So I just want to give a congratulations out to them.
Yes.
And that's it. We are out of here, Scott. We'll talk to everyone Wednesday night. We'll have Reach in the house, so you may not hear much from us, but we'll have Andrew here talk about everything. Scott, your Cowboys heading into the half here, down 3.
Yep, they're hanging in. Offense looks good. Defense looks lousy.
Yeah,
typical 2013 Cowboy game. Yeah, they have to win this game.
Big game for the Bears, too. Big game for the Lions. They should be pretty embarrassed if they haven't won. I feel like the Lions and Cowboys are kind of in the same boat. Two teams that really should have had these divisions in hand at this point and kind of let that slip. But we can talk more about that on Wednesday. So, why don't we take off? That's Scott. I'm Justin. We'll be back Wednesday night with headlines. Take care.
Andrew Reese is talking over me.
I can't stop that. We're out of here.
Jingle bells around his feet and presents on the sled. Hey, look at the Mayor's Derby on top of Dominic's head. A pair of shoes for Louie and a dress for Josephine. The label on the inside says they're made in Brooklyn. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Children sing and clap their hands, and Dominic starts to dance. They talk Italian to him, and he even understands. Kumbaras and kumbaras do they dance a tarantel. When Santa Nicola comes to town and brings Ujucharil. Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La la la, la 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 la. La, 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 la.
Hey, Dominic! Buona Natale!